Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show today. I'd like to just start off because I know these guys have some timing issues. We need to make sure we're on time today and don't keep them forever like I love to keep my guests on and on and on. But we've got Charles Stevens and Will Sue with us, and this show right now is going to take me completely out of my comfort zone, and so I'm praying that they both do most of the talking. It's going to be one of those rare things where you hear me probably be very quiet so I don't destroy all the names of the countries that they've biked to and from and all the things that are not American about this. But are because we're bringing this to you. So they're gonna help me out with some of the pronunciation and some of the things they've done. And this is really cool. You guys, are you both there?
Yeah. Hi, Elizabeth.
Perfect. Hi. Thank you so much for dialing in. What time is it there? And where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Scotland.
Awesome. And Will?
Yeah, and I'm calling from Bath in England. So, yeah.
Two places I've never been, want to be. It'd be so cool to be there. Now, have you guys had the privilege of being in the U.S. also?
Well, I'm half American. My mother's from originally New York and then
cool.
And then went down to Miami. So I'm in America quite a lot. So love America.
Cool.
But no, I haven't been yet, but it's definitely next on my list to visit. So.
Okay, so you know the feeling where you haven't been somewhere and don't know every single thing you're talking about and all that stuff. So you guys get to help me out here.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll just do a format of maybe who likes to do most of the talking, Charles or Will, or both.
Charles is more of a talker.
Well, how about if we just try and like trade off between you guys with maybe Charles starting first so we aren't all talking all over each other because I can't see you guys either. Charles, do you want to just start off and tell the audience what you guys did because it's so cool?
Yeah, so as of September, about a month ago pretty much today, we arrived back from cycling the Silk Road from Beijing to Tehran. So at the It was a 10,000-kilometer, 9-country-long exploit that took us through some of the most remote and least discovered parts of the world, also some of the most hostile regions of the world, so deserts, mountain ranges, the whole lot. And the aim was twofold. The aim was to become the two youngest people ever to do that, which is currently being filed with the Guinness Book of World Records at the moment. And at the same time, try and raise enough money for the school in Ghana that we've been supporting in order to keep it open.
Will, how old are you guys?
So we're both 19. I'm a few months younger than Charles, but no, we're in the same year at school together, which is how we know each other. So yeah.
So awesome. So I'm 47, and I'm a mom of four boys. And they're 21, 19, 17, and 15. And I'm picturing
That's
this.
Cool.
I can't imagine if they said, Mom, you know what we want to do? We want to bike and raise money and in a foreign country and do all this stuff. Tell me, just give me the parent reaction to, first of all, how'd you come up with the idea? And boy, what did your parents do?
The parents, put it this way, it took about a year of persuading to try and, I wouldn't say get them on side, but to get them just about agreeing to the idea. it was a long battle, but they came around to the idea and, on the basis that we prepared and planned for it sufficiently, which we did. So it all worked out well.
And how'd you guys come up with the idea?
Well, originally we planned actually a bigger trip. We wanted to do something starting in London, but because we basically, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but a lot of people take gap years now. So in between the end of school and beginning university, you get a year off, and people go traveling,
yeah,
do some work, stuff like that. Yeah. So we didn't want to just do a boring gap year, basically. And Charles came up with the crazy idea of cycling across a continent. And I was the only person silly enough to join him. So, yeah, that's how we ended up doing it.
Now, I'm a parent, of course, here. I told you that already. Now, did your parents, like, subtly follow, like, you know, slightly behind you in the car or anything fun? How'd that work? I mean,
yeah.
Did they, you know, were they biking behind you, or, I mean, did you guys just literally go on your own?
No, they weren't behind us by any means. They were calling anxiously, you know, from the UK when we got signal. But it was part of an organized expedition. So the reason that we could do it so quickly, so four months of cycle length that we did is very, very quick, and that's because we didn't have to carry our stuff. So we had some basic support through a company called TDA Global Cycling, that do crazy, sort of crazy trips, you know, in the cycling terms equivalent of things like Everest and ultra marathons and, I don't know, rowing across oceans and things. And one of their trips they do every couple of years is the Silk Road. Us and probably about 16 others signed up for them. Some of them do this sort of on a semi-professional basis. You know, one guy there, Mike, who we got quite close to, was the first Kiwi ever to kite ski to the South Pole and back. So we were really the puppies of the trip. No, there were some really, really quite amazing people there, but yeah, all of them were very determined, very tenacious. So it was a good group to be with.
Definitely. Now, how do you guys know each other? Have you known each other for a super long time, or where'd you meet? All that stuff.
Yeah, well, we've known each other for the last 5 years, but we went to boarding school together, so we've had to live with each other for 5 years. So we ended up being close friends. And yeah, that's how it started, really.
And are you both athletes? Or are you now an athlete after this? Were you both athletes?
You can't.
Yeah, we're probably both been in worse shape before, let's put it that way. But I know, me personally, I've always enjoyed racket sports. I've always played a lot of squash, a lot of tennis. And I've always liked doing sort of challenging things like running half marathons, long distance cycling, climbing in the UK and also in places like the Himalayas. And, you know, Will too did things like that, which I'm sure he can tell you about.
Yeah, and well, I did rowing for quite a few years, so that definitely helps with fitness. But I mean, I'd never done anything on this scale before, and I think no matter how much preparation you do, fitness-wise, I mean, it's not gonna prepare you for everything that comes your way on this trip. So although it definitely helps being in shape and being athletic, but I don't think it's hugely important on a trip like this.
What was the best thing that happened on the trip?
Getting to Tehran, finishing.
Yep. Okay. How about the second best thing? What's something that just completely surprised you that you weren't expecting, or you know, that turned out so cool?
I would say, well, why don't you answer it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say the people along the way. It was surprising and a welcome surprise that everyone was so friendly along the way. And I think all the strangers that we met who were so welcoming, they really helped make the trip. And especially in Iran, actually, at the end. So we found the people to be the friendliest we'd met along the whole route. And one instance that we laughed about was when we were cycling down a highway at going sort of like, I don't know, 20 miles an hour or something. And this car just slows down next to us, winds down the window, and an arm hands a bag of apples to us, and then just drives off without even saying anything to us.
That's awesome.
And it was just small things like that, which really, I know, made the trip for me, I think.
Yeah, you can't plan for that. Now, fear will stop many right in their tracks from even starting. Were you afraid? Were both of you afraid? Did you ever think, we better not do this? Or kids are a little bit more fearless, I find. not that you're kids, but you know what I mean? To me, teenagers are a little bit less fearless than adults. Like an adult might be like, I better not do that.
Well, I think it is a big, it's a leap in the dark in the sense that you're doing something which, you know, most people our age of any age don't do. You're doing something which is physically and psychologically and in an emotional sense too hugely demanding. You know, after cycling for 30 days, still knowing that you have 90 days to go, and the end's not in sight, and you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning, cycling for 7-8 hours, and that's really your day, is at times quite demoralizing, particularly if it's a bad day. But no, I think there is fear of the unknown, but I think as Will said, it was never of the people. That was never the thing that there was fear of. The fear was of, I don't know, the weather being really bad, it being really hot, really cold. Sometimes it was of the drivers. You know, one of the biggest fears actually was bad drivers. We had an incident in Iran where there was a car crash about 20 meters behind us, and the car actually turned over. There was a big pile of dust, and we had to cycle back to go and help the guy, and rolled over his car. And, you know, thankfully he didn't sustain any major injuries. But no, I think with these things, like anything, you've just got to give it a go, give it a try. And what success in these things comes down to mostly is your mental attitude and how you approach it. So I think for anyone, if they're interested in things like that, talk to people who have done things like that. We're always happy to talk. And yeah, get out there and give it a go. Maybe start small and build up your confidence.
And how do you, explain what, for somebody listening who might not know what it is, give us a visual and explain what the Silk Road is. And they teach us that in history class and things like that and in college and so forth here. But people listening, you know, if there's any younger people listening who, we have a big teen audience too. Just explain to us what that is. It's the Silk Road.
Well, yeah, Charles is the historian, so I'll let him explain.
So the Silk Road is, I mean, it's something that's you know, always fascinated me. So that was one of the things that prompted the trip. But it's essentially a connection, a network of trade paths based on sort of economic connections throughout Eurasia that spanned originally from China to the Mediterranean, and it throughout the Middle Ages and the ancient period, and in some cases even today, it connects the whole of Eurasia via trade. So with you know, materials, silk, pottery, gold, silver, all these things. That's why it's called the Silk Road, because people traded. You know, Chinese merchants would go on their caravans with silk from originally Xi'an or around there to places like Italy and exchange things for spices and things like that. But it's a misunderstood term in that it's not a linear road. It's more of a network that connects lots of different places and doesn't really have a start and end point. You know, the Silk Road could equally be Samarkand to Bukhara, which are two famous Silk Road cities in the middle of Uzbekistan, as much as it could be Beijing to Tehran, which we did.
Do you, what's your next adventure? Do you think you'll have another one?
I personally definitely think I'll be doing more adventures after this. Because, yeah, as I said, I'd never done something like this before, but it's made me realize that they're not impossible as long as you plan for them and just get on with it and do it. So I'm not entirely sure what's next. I mean, maybe some slightly easier cycling in Europe, or maybe some road trips by car. Yeah, we'll see.
Don't worry, I know I'm pretty much along the same lines as Will. yeah, I'd love to do some more stuff, but definitely feeling like I need a break at the moment. Still recovering, to be honest.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. And when you do think about that, has the experience, you're both on the phone together, but when you think about doing things in the future, do you say, okay, we're going to team up again and do this? Or are you like, okay, you know, 4 months with you is enough, buddy. You know, how's the friendship after doing something like that?
Well, we haven't actually talked about whether we're going to do another trip together, but I think 4 months is definitely a long time to spend with someone. I did definitely enjoy doing it with Charles, so I would definitely be up for doing another trip.
Now,
yeah.
You go. It's Will, right?
You go on, Elizabeth. You go, Elizabeth.
I was just curious, too. You guys picked a charity with there was a charitable component to this as well. So you guys just didn't, you know, get on your bikes and ride and all that stuff. You did it for a reason. And I was just wondering if you could tell us about the charity and how much money you raised, and also if you have a way of putting that in U.S. dollars so somebody listening here doesn't have to do all the math.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking. And it was one of the major things that prompted this challenge in the first place. So originally in 2013, Will and I and other friends, we went out to Ghana to help at the school, which we taught at and, helped with. Absolutely loved it. The kids were amazing, amazing place. And we went back last September in 2015. Really enjoyed it again, but we realized that the school was running out of funding. And this would mean that it was at threat of closing down. And we had both developed pretty close connections with the school. We knew the children pretty well on a personal level too. And it was quite heartbreaking to think that these kids who were from 4 to 14 years old would either not be at school or would have to go to a school that would be miles and miles away and would probably be very difficult to go to, which would mean that in practice they wouldn't go to school. So no, we sort of made it our mission to try and raise enough money to keep the school going. So I think we're both absolutely thrilled that we've raised just over £31,000. So that's I don't know what that is on the current exchange rate, but it's probably around
probably not worth very much anymore.
That's funny. You have a general idea.
not much at the moment. So we've passed our fundraising target, but any penny or any dime that can be spared goes a long way. And if you're interested, you can go to our website, beijingtoturan.com, where there's a donation button, or you can go to Just Giving and type in Beijing to Turan Charity Cycle. If you type in Beijing to Turan Charity Cycle on Google, you'll get a lot of results with the trip. There's about 5 pages of them, so you won't miss it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely here, and there's really cool pictures of you guys with your bikes. And are you going to college? I don't know where you're at in that. So this is a year off between what we would call it here is like high school and college. You guys had boarding school, and then do you guys go? Are you going to go to college in the U.S. or over there, or how's that work?
Yeah, well, we're both currently at university now, so. I'm at Bath University and Charles is at St. Andrews, but actually Charles only had something like 24 hours at home, I think, was it, before you went to university?
Yeah. It was stressful.
What school are you at?
Bath University.
Okay, got it. That's great. And what are you guys studying?
I'm studying history.
I'm reading
history up in Scotland at St. Andrews.
Yeah, and I'm doing international development and economics.
Nice. Did you guys have you always had a you know how sometimes kids don't care about charities or other people, or you know, they just kind of sometimes kids are just kids and they're focused on their stuff and their friends and everything. Have you guys always had a cause-type charitable component to yourselves? Seems like you're very aware.
Well, I can't speak to Will, but I imagine it's pretty much the same. Yeah, we're both I think like you, I'm sure in the States, you know, we're both very lucky to, you know, live in prosperous Western countries where, to be honest, compared to a lot of places, life is relatively easy. And I find this trip is really, I mean, it really brings it home where, you know, you're driving on roads which are, or you're, in our case, cycling on roads which are absolute crap. You're, you know, there's not electricity sometimes because there isn't any. You can't drink the water because it's not clean. And just all these little basic things that we take for granted, and many people unfortunately don't have, is, I think has made me certainly feel quite grateful for, you know, for the opportunities and, you know, the privileges that I have. So yeah, I've always found it nice to give a bit back.
Can one of you, on your blog, I love this blog because I spend a lot of time thinking about exactly what you just said, how sort of lucky we have it and how grateful I am. And I see things on TV and I don't know if I see things firsthand, maybe like you guys have seen sort of, but you see things on TV and you just cringe and think, wow, children shouldn't have to go through that or people shouldn't have to go through that. And, you know, all sorts of atrocities all over the place. And I love your blog because you talk about some of these things. Does one of you sort of want to take that and just elaborate a little bit?
I mean, Will was responsible for the pictures, so he did a lot of the photographing. So, but I spent a lot of the time writing and doing the blog. I was interested in, you know, exploring the culture and the history and, you know, those things that you just talked about. I just found that there were definitely instances along the way where you go, gosh, I'm pretty lucky, aren't I? I don't know in what way you would like me to expand, but no, that was definitely one thing I discussed.
Maybe tell us about some of the things that you saw, like in a particular place or what you went through.
Okay, so I would say one of the hardest trials of the trip, although there were many, it was sort of a never-ending thing, but within 7 days of getting out of China, we got into the Gobi Desert. It's one of the sort of harshest, largest deserts in the world. And it's a cold desert too, which a lot of people don't realize. So you get temperatures there that go down to minus 40. And we were lucky in that we were spared that. But we did have a period of about 5 days, where we had 10 hours cycling plus per day because we had gale force winds blowing in our face. You know, there's no shops. The landscape is monotonous. We got caught in sandstorms in 2 days. Will wasn't wearing leg warmers, so his legs got shredded. I was more lucky.
Yeah.
You wake up in your tent and you've got sand in your eyes, your ears, your sleeping bag. Everything itches, everything scratches. You don't want to get out your phone or your camera because it does break. My computer actually broke. There was another day where it was raining and both of us were developing mild hypothermia. We were unable to change gears because our hands were so cold. There was points during the trip where you just gotta keep going and you don't know necessarily what why or, you know, what you're going towards, and you just have to think of the charity and why you're doing this and why it matters. But yeah, it was a time that was very, very tough. But there was also some great times.
Mm-hmm. I wanna keep going here on the descriptions of things. I don't know whether people say Iran or Iran. I just find myself saying it both ways, and it sort of depends on where you're from. But could you describe a little bit of that part of the trip?
Yeah, well, I mean, as we already said, the people were amazing. But the place itself, it's quite varied, actually. So we sort of arrived into a more deserty place with mountains, and then we passed into one of their national parks, And at one stage, we were cycling through sort of jungle and stuff, which is quite interesting. But it was probably one of the more populated countries we've visited. And we began to see a lot more towns, a lot more people, a lot more going on in general, which was actually quite a nice change for once. And then cycling into Tehran was probably some of the scariest cycling I've done. It's a huge city of, I'm not sure how many million people, but it's a big city with crazy roads. So that was, it was quite a challenging end to the trip, and probably one of the more dangerous stretches, actually. But it's, I mean, Tehran is just like similar to most Middle Eastern cities or any city, really. It's very diverse, like lots of different sorts of people. And I know in the West we hear a lot about Iran, a lot of it negative, but from what we saw and from what we experienced, we didn't see any of the bad things that go on, and we only experienced kindness from all the people. So yeah, it was a great experience.
Okay, this might be the dumbest question ever, but how do you know where you're going?
Oh, that's no, it's not a dumb question at all. So I'm
you're on the road. You're on the right path, guys. Keep going. You know, how's everything? How do you know where you are?
So a combination of a Garmin. I don't know if you have Garmins in the States, but they're basically GPS computers. That I had, so you know, I could use that to make sure that we were heading in the right direction. Then maps too, of course, asking people, just being sensible and taking things slowly, not rushing into things. If you think you're going the wrong way, just take your time, have a look at your notes or at your Garmin, and take it slowly. Don't rush, because if you do, you may be cycling an extra 100 kilometers.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about food. What did you guys eat? I'm guessing there, you know, wasn't a McDonald's every 10 feet.
No, certainly not. Well, part of the expedition was that we got, we had a breakfast and dinner made for us, which made life a lot easier. So we get a hot meal in the evening, which they'd have to just use local ingredients that they could find that day. So we actually kept a running tally on the trip, and I think we had something like 10 different proteins whilst we were on the trip, including horse in Mongolia, which is one of their local foods. So not everyone was keen on eating horse, but it was the only meat around.
So. Did you eat that?
No.
Yeah, I tried it actually.
I'm normally quite adventurous with my food, but horses are one of my favorite animals, so I wasn't keen, but I don't know. I suppose it's just like any other meat in the end. No, there was definitely lots of interesting food there, and we tried all the local delicacies, some of which we weren't so keen on, but it was interesting.
I'm going to keep looking at your blog here a little bit. I'm fascinated by all the things that you saw and did. And could one of you take you have a blog called The Silk Road Revived, the new Silk Road Part 1 and Part 2. I don't know if you have this memorized or anything like that, but could you talk about what you've written here?
Okay, yeah, of course. So as I said, the Silk Road is a historical concept that goes back thousands of years. And China, as of 2012, introduced something called the New Silk Road Initiative. And I think that it's going to be an epoch-making initiative. It's basically China's attempt in a geopolitical and economic sense to connect a lot of the Central Asian countries, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, those places, even Iran too, Mongolia, to China's sphere of influence. So what we're seeing is China projecting a lot of money into these countries. They've invested $50 billion in infrastructure projects in Central Asia. They're connecting gas pipelines, oil pipelines. As of February this year, there was the first train ever to go from Beijing to Tehran, bringing with it Samsungs and something else I can't remember. So it's a very, very, very interesting time in both the political and economic situations in these countries. And what we're basically seeing is, through these economic initiatives, I think increasing stability being brought to these regions, or at least that's what I hope, by being connected to, China's growing prosperity. So by China injecting money into these countries, what I hope to see is that these countries will get richer too, people will be more prosperous. Life will improve. But it's an incredibly interesting time. But of course, with it comes globalization, industrialization, and tourism. And with that comes, a destruction of the cultural authenticity of these countries. And they are culturally unique, particularly places like Mongolia, where over 50% of the people live a nomadic style of life. That means that they move houses about 7 times a year. I mean, I haven't moved house 7 times in my life, and I think most people move houses about 7 times in their life. These people move houses 7 times in a year.
Isn't that wild? So, I saw that on TV on some type of historical special, and my jaw dropped.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. Although it's not, and in some ways not related to the New Silk Road, but what we are seeing through this New Silk Road is both greater economic prosperity being brought to these countries, but also a change in their cultures. And if this is a part of the world which you think anyone listening might be remotely interested in, go and see it now, because unfortunately it's not going to be like this forever. And it's an amazing place, amazing people, absolutely stunning in places. It's a really very special part of the world.
It sounds like it. It sounds like you guys got to experience jasmine. Isn't jasmine the coolest smell in the world?
Oh, yeah. I remember, it was our second day cycling, actually, and we were cycling along this quiet country road just surrounded by jasmine trees, and you could smell it. It was so nice.
I was raised in Iowa, and, that's about as far as jasmine, but no. And so when I moved to California, they have jasmine there. I was like, wow, that's a really cool tree and plant and smell and everything. I love the smell of jasmine. So that's cool. I'm looking at your blog clearly. But, that's awesome. What about what I want to ask you guys is this is a parent question. You guys sound so smart. Are you both like seriously, I don't know if I could put my two oldest boys on the phone or have them do something like this or anything. And they're pretty smart kids. You guys sound kind of genius, brilliant. Like, are you both like scholar, A student type guys? You both sound really brilliant to me.
Oh, you're very kind, Elizabeth. Thank you. We're both hard workers, and I mean we're both bright, but there's definitely kids out there who are brighter than us. But
That's
I guess
scary.
It's about making
really just when you think you're smart, you find somebody smarter, huh? That's funny. It always is that way though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But no, we get by, and make the best with what you have, and it's amazing what you can achieve with that.
Yeah, definitely. And clearly someone has the passion to write. Who's that writing all this? Is that Charles that's writing?
Yes.
Oh, Will, I can't remember. Okay. Mm. Yeah. And the photography is gorgeous. On your blog, which is BeijingToTehran.com, there's a gallery of pictures. And so I'm really hoping that people go here, and I'll post I've got a link posted, but I was trying to post some of these pictures too. Is this just like an iPhone, or is this a camera, like a camera?
It's a mixture, really. I started off the trip using just iPhone, and Charles had sort of like a compact camera. But along the way, I decided to buy a proper camera because, I don't know, I was really enjoying the photography aspect and thought I'd try and get some better photos. So towards the end, it's using a big like DSLR camera. Yeah, I mean, the photography was
gorgeous.
Was, yeah, a mixture of both of us. So, yeah.
Which you've put on an Instagram. So what's your Instagram? Because Instagram is super popular. I know my kids wish I would get off of Instagram. But
yeah.
No, I'm not going to.
Yeah, our username's at Bike Tripping.
Or
just search Beijing to Tehran and we'll turn up. Yeah.
Gotcha. And are you guys on Snapchat also?
No Snapchat, unfortunately.
No,
we have Twitter, and that's @BikeTripping1. We've got a few social media platforms, but maybe on your advice, Elizabeth, we'll have to set up Snapchat.
That'll
yeah.
probably be really popular with everybody your age group, I would bet, because I know for sure I'm banned from that one, so it's the right age for you guys. My kids are like, Mom, there's no Snapchat for you. I'm like, okay, I'll mind on that one. Okay, so I'm scrolling through your Instagram. What'd you say?
No, just the problem with Snapchat would have been that, I mean, most of the way we didn't have internet, so probably...
Yeah.
Like with Instagram, we were sort of posting every sort of 5 days when we managed to get Wi-Fi. So it was the trickiest thing, I think.
Yeah, this is some really hard biking. So I'm scrolling through your Instagram. Do you, I don't know, do you have a favorite picture or a bunch of favorite pictures? Or that's probably hard to do on the radio, but so.
I think one of my favorite pictures was maybe taken. I don't know if you've heard of the Devasa gas crater, or it's known as the Gates of Hell. Basically, this gas drilling operation in Turkmenistan, and it collapsed in the 1970s. And what the Soviet engineers did was they set the gas on fire, hoping it would burn off within a couple of weeks, but it's been burning for 40 years so far. So you can go and visit it, stand on the edge of this 70-meter wide crater, which is just it's just a burning hole, and it's a really interesting, weird place to visit, but the photos of that were pretty cool.
Yeah, those are neat. I see those too. What about language wise were there language barriers here?
Yeah, I mean, that was always a challenge, communicating to people, you know, when you can't speak the language is very difficult. Communication was difficult, but when we were talking to people or trying to get things what you want when you want in a shop per se or on the road, I mean, you know, gestures in themselves, you know, speak widely. Smiling at someone or pointing at someone or frowning or putting your hands up or making some elaborate gesture are pretty effective, to be honest. Yeah, especially when you have nothing else to go on or on the road. I mean, you know, gestures in themselves, smiling at... Hello?
Yep, we got you still.
Super. Someone or... It was I think there's a bit of feedback coming through.
There was, yeah. Did it go away?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's gone now. As I was saying, pretty much just pointing and smiling, and some people speak basic English, which helps, but at times it was very difficult. I remember one time we were in the Tan Shan Mountains in Kyrgyzstan, at the top of a 2,500 meter pass, so in American terms, that's about 8,000 feet. And there was a small hut there where a family lived in, and they invited me in for tea. And over the course of about 45 minutes, of these people spoke absolutely no English, no more English than I spoke Kyrgyz, which is a local language. And through that 45 minutes, we managed to establish how many brothers and sisters they had, where we were cycling to, and that one of them was a twin. That was 45 minutes worth of communication.
That's funny. Do you speak other languages? Do both of you speak different languages?
Well, I speak a tiny bit of Spanish and French, but that's not particularly helpful in Central Asia.
No, no, not at all. Exactly. Did it inspire you to learn? Did something like this inspire you to?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it would have been a lot nicer to be able to engage in a proper conversation with the locals. But then the other problem is the languages that they know. For example, Mongolian. I've never heard such a difficult language. Like, even after 3 weeks there, we could only manage to say hello and thank you, because it was just, I think it's sort of like Chinese, where it's such a different language that it's almost impossible for you to hear it and be able to repeat it. So it's things like that makes it really difficult. Although a lot of the Central Asian countries do speak Russian. So if you learned Russian, you'd probably be able to get by.
You guys have seen something I've always wanted to see in my life, and that's the Terracotta Army.
Yes.
That is one of the coolest pictures and coolest things. Can you explain what that is to people?
Yeah. So the Terracotta Army is pretty extraordinary, as I'm sure you know. It's basically a collection of terracotta sculptures. I think it was during the first, or the Qin dynasty, about 2,000 years ago, and when the emperor died and was buried, he got this terracotta army buried with him, and that includes chariots, warriors, horses, and there's several thousand terracotta warriors there. And it was discovered by a Chinese peasant working on the land about 40 years ago. I think it was in the 1970s, and it caused, it was like the discovery of the Great Pyramids of Giza or Machu Picchu in Peru. It was one of these, era-making discoveries, and it's extraordinary. I remember going in there and seeing lines of thousands, and they haven't even excavated the whole thing. It's huge, but there's these lines of hundreds and hundreds of elaborate warriors, which are all life-size. They're all the size of you and me. Each of them with distinct facial expressions and distinct dress, and it's quite incredible. I would suggest anyone who's in China or thinking about going to go. It's amazing.
Isn't it just, it's hard to even describe. I don't even know how somebody would even make this. My mind can never wrap itself around it. Was it that kind of experience in person? Or you're just like, wow, how did you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was vast, and it's just one of those things which, I don't know, seeing something so old, it's sort of hard to imagine it in its time, but it's still amazing, like, like whenever you visit, however old you are, whatever. And yeah, it was just a cool experience.
Yeah. Is there anything else like that you saw that, I'm just kind of scrolling through your Instagram, that really stuck out. There's a bunch of things here. As I'm looking through your Instagram, I'm like, okay, where'd you guys get the bikes? Like, how'd you decide on the bike? Were you just, did somebody give you a bike? There's got to be a story behind the bikes.
Well, a lot of research, really. But they're both specifically designed for touring. So, because touring's sort of in between, I guess you could say, in between road bikes and mountain bikes, in that you want a sturdy bike, but they're sort of modern carbon fiber, high-tech racing bikes. They're hard to repair and complicated to maintain and stuff. So touring bikes are really just very basic, steel-framed, strong, durable bikes, and that's what you want when you're on a trip like this. So I've got an American bike, actually. It's called Surly, a Surly disc trucker, and Charles went for a British brand called Condor. Yeah.
What was the first thing you guys ate when you got back?
To be honest, I can't. We'll actually work it out. Each of us, we ate. How many 100,000 calories was it?
It was just under 400,000.
Think of that. So over the course of the trip, we ate over 400,000 calories each. And to be honest, I've been back for a month now, and I was actually talking to Will about this earlier. We were eating probably average about 6,000 calories a day. Some days we would be eating as much as 8 or 9, because of the physical demands. Your body needs as much energy as it can get, and the problem was never eating too much. The problem was not eating enough. So both of us still lost quite a lot of weight despite eating literally as much as we could. but in terms of your question about coming back, I've just, for the last month, every single lunch I've had a salad. I've had a green salad because I'm so sick of calories. You know, things like that now make me feel sick because I've just eaten so much about it. I mean, imagine smoking, I don't know, 120 cigarettes in one day. You probably won't feel like a cigarette again for a while.
I get it.
No, I think the first meal I had when I got back, we have this tradition in my family where we always go to the local Indian restaurant when we get home from a trip. So that's what I did.
Yeah, that's a great idea. It's food. Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you would miss something. You know, like I think if I'd been gone that long, I'd be like, okay, I have to have a chocolate chip cookie or a piece of pizza or you know, something like that. But you know, I can't picture what you were eating the whole time. So to me, the modern comforts of everything you're used to eating at home would be like, okay, I need to eat my home food.
Yeah,
that's the mom thing, maybe. I don't know.
No. In that way, I completely agree. Some of the things I love to have when I got back, I love olives. It was nice to have olives again. I really enjoy prawn crackers, so I love a good prawn cracker.
It's the small things which you miss, you know.
Salami, and ham. Oh, good honey roast ham. I still drool.
So like a kid coming home from college, we just had them home for the weekend, and they were like, okay, mom, we need food. So that's what I was thinking of there. It's like, okay, I'm sick of these protein bars or whatever kept you going, and onto the food. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go pretty soon here, but I have a couple more questions, and that's the first one being, is there anything that I haven't asked you, because I certainly can't think of everything or anything sometimes, it just depends on the day, but everything to ask you, is there anything that I didn't cover that you want to talk about?
I would maybe mention the stretch we did through the Pamir, along the Pamir Highway, which I think was probably one of the best stretches for me, and one of the most special scenery that
we
saw.
So what is it? What highway?
It's called the Pamir Highway, and it's a road that goes through the Pamir Mountains. It's got one of the highest road passes in the world, which goes up to 4,655 meters. So what's that? That's something like just 14,000 feet, maybe. Something around there. So it was tough being at high altitude. I mean, it makes it harder to exert yourself, you know, there's less oxygen and stuff, but it also provided some of the best views that we've seen. And like being up at altitude, it's just big blue skies during the day, stars at night, and it was just special being up there, I think.
Beautiful. Yeah, I moved to Maine from Lake Tahoe, so I'm used to mountains and things like that, but not ever biking them or, you know, anything like you're talking in, I just remind everybody listening, it's not like you, like, you know, are tooling around on a bike path. I mean, you guys really had some terrain to cover.
In terms of the terrain, that's I think that's a good point. That's something I was going to mention. It was split up over the 10,000 kilometers of about, I would say, 70% on road and 30% off road. But by on road, I don't mean a nice sort of American highway, Route 66 or something. On road tarmac can be anything from, you know, a nice road like you would find in the States to a ragged country lane full of potholes and, you know, corrugations. And I mean, some of the roads were absolutely horrific. I mean, you couldn't even call them roads. They were so bad.
Yeah. Do you, to everybody listening, and hopefully a lot of kids listen to this too, but let's just pretend some of the parents are listening. When I'm hoping maybe you could give parents some advice. Sounds kind of funny, doesn't it? Teenagers giving parents advice. Well, we're going to go there for a minute here. And what's the advice when a child says, for example, and I'm kind of asking leading questions here, but what's the response when a child, teenager, college student, anybody says, you know, I have a dream and it probably completely is something you've never heard of, differs from maybe your line of thinking, anything you'd ever thought of doing, but I want to go do this. And your parents are apprehensive, in fear, scared for you, scared for them, you know, go there from a parent standpoint. What do you hope parents say? Or does that make sense? I know it's kind of long-winded, but, you know, what can you teach parents and kids who want to do something like this?
I would, to be honest, I think, because I know my parents were a bit reluctant at first and they sort of were just hoping the idea would go away, but unfortunately for them, it didn't. So I would say if your child's serious about doing it, then you should just help them achieve it. And that's what our parents definitely did in the end. And I think although to a parent, you'd be really reluctant to send your child off cycling for 4 months or something similar. But we found it, well, I definitely found it to be one of the best experiences of my life so far. And I mean, you learn a lot being on the road. And one of the people on the trip said to us, this cycle trip's probably worth more than a year in college. And I'd probably agree with them. You know, you find out a lot about other people, you find out a lot about yourself, and I would encourage anyone and everyone to do a trip like that.
Yeah. If your parents were on the phone with us, what would they say?
I think
maybe
they would.
Hi, mom. Hi, dad.
they may well be. I think they would. Such a good question. I think they would be happy in hindsight, but I know for them that it was a big, you know, it was a big leap doing this. You know, it was a big leap trusting us and doing something like this. So, I mean, they were, as I said, they were apprehensive, but I think they would say be open-minded. Don't off an idea, no matter how crazy it sounds, without at least giving it a thought and, you know, thinking about it in an open-minded way. So yeah, I guess following on from what Will said, just consider things. Don't be closed-minded. Just think about it and make a decision based on the merits or the shortcomings of the idea, rather than having preconceptions of things.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to take this a little bit more here and then add something to it. But now let's take this out a few years and say you guys have kids and they say, you know what, Dad, here's what I want to do. What's your reaction going to be?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I guess it's probably hard to know.
See, it's back on you, isn't it?
Yeah. But to be honest, I'd like to think that I would encourage it. I mean, I'll probably be asking to join my child on the trip, I guess, but no, I would definitely encourage it.
Yeah. Well, I asked you that because I have a child. I have four boys, like I was telling you, and four young men, and they're all very, very different with very different goals. One wants to be a professional baseball player, but the youngest one, he wants to see the Great Wall of China from space.
Oh, wow. That's
so cool.
Yeah, talk about that. I'm like, yeah. Oh, my goodness gracious, really? We really have to become like an astronaut, a pilot, you know, just sitting here like cringing. And my, you know, they keep teaching me all these lessons. And one of the biggest lessons I learn is to, you know, because it's a natural reaction for parents to go into fear mode sometimes. Not everybody, but most of us worry about you guys. And I've taught myself to place my confidence in my children. Like, okay, I've raised you to be, you know, competent, nice, a good person, you know, make good decisions, things like that. And so I find myself sort of moving my confidence to them and saying, you know, I really trust you. If this is something you really want to do, go for it. And I just wondered if you had that. It sounds like you really have cool parents who ultimately put their trust in you guys.
Yeah, I think we're both lucky like that. But you sound like a very good mum in that you trust your kids, but at the same time want the best for them. And I guess like any parent, and you know, hopefully, God willing, that one day I will be. You know, that's essentially what I would want for them. Just the best. That's all you can want, really.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, because you guys did something that, you know, nobody's done it. You guys are, you know, that's a cool. The Guinness Book of World Records, you guys did this. You raised money. You did everything right. So it's awesome. So I wanted to leave everybody with an Instagram post that you have, which your Instagram is bike tripping. And you wrote, you took a picture of this, and I don't know whose hand this is, but it says, to all those who cannot resist the temptation to see what is around the bend in the road. Awesome.
It's a photo of a book. I forget the name, but it's something like Biking the World Solo. So it was this,
yeah,
I think a man, an American guy in the 20s or 30s or something, cycled around the world. And I think, yeah, those are words to live by.
Awesome. All right. Is there anything else? I just want to make sure I'm respectful of your time, and I thank you both for being here. Is there anything else you want to add before we go? Maybe your website again.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. And this has been a lot of fun. And once again, for anyone who wants to find out more, please send us an email or go onto our website, Beijing to Tehran, and you can find all the details there.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah,
it's been an absolute privilege and a joy talking to you both. And I'm so glad you took time out of your busy schedules to come onto the show. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And best of luck to you. I hope you'll keep me, you know, I hope you guys maybe follow me back on Instagram if you didn't already, because I need the mom love, but more so because I'll follow you guys because I really hope the point there is that I hope we can keep in touch. Because, and however that works, I'm not going on Snapchat, but I am on Instagram, and you have my email and things like that, because I'd love to keep tabs on you guys and see what you do for your next adventure. If maybe this, it looks like a great, honestly, your blog looks like a book to me, so I hope you do something like that. And just best of luck to you both. It's really cool to talk to you, and I'm sure you've inspired so many people with this. So thank you for taking time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm now following you on Instagram, Elizabeth, as of 10 seconds ago.
That's really funny.
The best,
thank you.
Best
yeah.
ever you network following.
Yeah. A lot of kid pictures on there, but overall, it's nothing like what you have. But I am going to go read every Instagram post of yours because I love all the history and everything. And I just think what you've done here is it reaches everybody of all ages with fascinating things. So I'm really proud of you guys. Really proud of your parents for letting you do this and supporting you and everybody who helped you do this, because it's groundbreaking and really cool. So best of luck to you both again.
Thanks,
and
Liz.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
And please
thank
wish
you.
Your son good luck at seeing the Great Wall
thank
from
you.
Space.
Yeah, I'll have to Maybe you'll find that on Instagram. He's like, Mom, can I take pilot lessons? I'm like, oh, my God. So you know the feeling. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And, again, go to BeijingToTehran.com, and they're on Instagram at Bike Tripping. We've had a lot of fun. They've been such good sports with all my goofy questions and had some good history lessons in here. And we just wish everybody the very best. And I bet a Child Unheard charity would love your donations, too. So please look that up. I'll try and get a link to that as well. But these guys bike for 4 months and raise money for them. And we're all just super proud and super supportive of them and everything they've done, and wish them the best of luck. So thanks, everybody, so much for listening, and I hope you all have a wonderful day. And thank you both again for being here. Take care, everybody. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Network. For more information, just visit us at besteveryou.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.